Hello, everyone. We're continuing with Thomas Brooks on Precious Remedies Against Satan's Devices. We were in the section how he devices he uses to entice the soul to sin. We did 10, which is working them to be frequent in comparing themselves and their ways with those that are reputed and reported to be worse than themselves. And then device 11, polluting and defiling the souls in judgments of men with dangerous errors. And then device number 12, which was to try to get people to spend time with a wicked company and keep wicked society. So to choose wicked company and keep wicked society. And that finished the devices for luring the soul to sin. And this time, we're continuing on to the next overall section. And we'll go ahead and do that now. The second thing to be shown is the several devices that Satan has as to draw souls to sin, so to keep souls from holy duties, to hinder souls in holy services or from, and to keep them off from religious performances. And he showed me Joshua the high priest standing before the angel of the Lord, and Satan standing at his right hand to resist him. Zechariah 3, verse 1. The truth of this I shall show you in the following particulars. The first device that Satan has to draw souls from holy duties and to keep them off from religious services is device number one, by presenting the world in such a dress and in such a garb to the soul as to ensnare the soul and to win upon the affections of the soul. He represents the world to them in its beauty and bravery or finery, the editor says, probably is the word, which proves a bewitching sight to the world of men. The footnote, the beauty of the world foils a Christian more than the strength, the flattering sunshine more than the blustering storm. In storms, we keep our garments close about us, as in the fable of the sun and the wind. Back to Brooks, back to the main section. It is true this took not Christ because Satan could find no matter in him for his temptations to work upon, so that he can no sooner cast out his golden bait, but we are ready to play with it and to nibble at it. He can no sooner throw out his golden ball, but men are apt to run after it, though they lose God and their souls in the pursuit. How many professors in these days have for a time followed hard after God, Christ, and the ordinances, till the devil has set before them the world in all its beauty and bravery, which has so bewitched their souls that they have grown to have low thoughts of holy things, and then to be cold in their affections to holy things, and then to slight them, and at last, with the young man in the gospel, to turn their backs upon them. The time, the thoughts, the spirits, the hearts, the souls, the duties, the services, that the inordinate love of this wicked world does eat up and destroy, and has ate up and destroyed. Where 1,000 are destroyed by the world's frowns, 10,000 are destroyed by the world's smiles. The world, siren-like, it sings us and sinks us. It kisses us and betrays us like Judas. It kisses us and smites us under the fifth rib like Joab. The honors, splendor, and the glory of this world are but sweet poisons that will much endanger us if they do not eternally destroy us. The footnote, the inhabitants of Nilus are deaf by the noise of the waters, so the world makes such a noise in men's ears that they cannot hear the things of heaven. The world is like the swallow's dung that put out Tobias his eyes. The champions could not wring an apple out of Milo's hand by a strong hand, but a fair maid, by fair means, got it presently. The multitude of souls that have surfeited of these sweet baits and died forever. Now, the remedies against this device of Satan are these. Remedy number one. The first remedy against this device of Satan is to dwell upon the impotency and weakness of all these things here below. They are not able to secure you from the least evil. They are not able to procure you the least desirable good. The crown of gold cannot cure the headache, nor the velvet slipper ease the gout, nor the jewel about the neck cannot take away the pain of the teeth. The frogs of Egypt entered into the rich men's houses of Egypt as well as the poor. Our daily experience does evidence this, that all the honors, riches, etc., that men enjoy cannot free them from the colic, the fever, or lesser diseases. The footnote, the prior in Melanchthon rolled his hand up and down in a basin full of angels, thinking thereby to have charmed his gout, but it would not do. Nugus the Scythian, despising the rich presents and ornaments that were sent unto him by the Emperor Constantinople, asked whether these things could drive away calamities, diseases, or death. Nay, that which seemed most strange is that a great deal of wealth cannot keep men from falling into extreme poverty. Judges 1, verse 6, you shall find 70 kings and their fingers and toes cut off, glad like whelps to lick up crumbs under the king's table. And shortly after, the same king that brought them to this penury is reduced to the same poverty and misery. Why then should that be a bar to keep you out of heaven, that cannot give you the least ease on earth? Remedy number two, the second remedy against this device of Satan, is to dwell upon the vanity of them, which is uselessness, as well as upon the impotency of all worldly good. This is the sum of Solomon's sermon, Vanity of Vanities, All is Vanity. This our first parents found, and therefore named their son Abel, or Vanity. Solomon, that had tried these things and could best tell the vanity of them, he preaches this sermon over again and again, vanity of vanities, and all is vanity. It is sad to think how many thousands there be that can say with the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity, nay, swear it, and yet follow after these things as if there were no other glory nor felicity, but what is to be found in these things they call vanity. Footnote, Gallienus, king of Vandals, led in triumph by Belisarius, cried out, vanity of vanity, all is vanity. The fancy of Lucian, who placed Clarin on the top of a high hill, viewing all the affairs of men living and looking on their greatest cities as little birds' nests, is very pleasant. Such men will sell Christ, heaven, and their souls for a trifle, that call these things vanity, but do not cordially believe them to be vanity, but set their hearts upon them as if they were their crown, the top of all their royalty and glory. Oh, let your souls dwell upon the vanity of all things here below, till your hearts be so thoroughly convinced and persuaded of the vanities of them as to trample upon them and make them a footstool for Christ to get up and ride in a holy triumph in your hearts. The footnote, oh, the imperfection, the ingratitude, the levity, the inconstancy, the perfidiousness of those creatures we most servilely affect. Creatures is anything of this world, anything that can be created, or that is, even graces can be a creature. But here, you know, we're talking about things of this world. Did we but weigh man's pain with his payment, his crosses with his mercies with his pleasures, we should then sue that there is nothing got by the bargain and conclude, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Chrysostom said once that if he were the fittest in the world to preach a sermon to the whole world, gathered together in one congregation, and had some high mountain for his pulpit, from where he might have a prospect of all the world in his view, and were furnished with a voice of brass, a voice as loud as the trumpets of the archangel, that all the world might hear him, he would choose to preach upon no other text than that in the Psalms, O mortal men, how long will ye love vanity and follow after leasing? Psalm 4, verse 2. Tell me, you say, all things under the sun are vanity. If you do really believe what you say, why do you spend more thoughts and time on the world than you do on Christ, heaven, and your immortal souls? Why do you then neglect your duty toward God to get the world? Why do you then so eagerly pursue after the world and are so cold in your pursuing after God, Christ, and holiness? Why then are your hearts so exceedingly raised when the world comes in and smiles upon you, and so much dejected and cast down when the world frowns upon you and with Jonah's gourd withers before you? Remedy number three, the third remedy against this device of Satan, is to dwell much upon the uncertainty, the mutability, the inconstancy of all things under the sun. Man himself is but the dream of a dream, but the generation of a fancy, but an empty vanity, but the curious picture of nothing, a poor, feeble, dying flash. All temporals are as transitory as a hasty headlong current, a shadow, a ship, a bird, an arrow, a post that passes by. Why shouldst thou set thine eyes upon that which is not? Says Solomon, Proverbs 23, verse 5. And says the apostle, the fashion of this world passes away. 1 Corinthians 7:31, the footnote. That verse intimates that there is nothing of any firmness or solid consistence in the creature or anything that's created. Heaven only has a foundation. Earth has none, but is hanged upon nothing, as Job speaks in chapter 26, verse 7. The apostle willed Timothy to charge rich men that they be not high-minded, nor put their trust in uncertain riches. 1 Timothy 6:17. The footnote, riches were never true to any that trusted to them. They have deceived men as Job's brook did the poor travelers in the summer season. They are like bad servants whose shoes are made of running leather and will never tarry long with one master. Again, the footnote, a phrase meaning he is given to rambling gout. As a bird hops from tree to tree, so do the honors and riches of this world from man to man. Let Job and Nebuchadnezzar testify this truth, who fell from great wealth to great want or lack. No man can promise himself to be wealthy till night. One storm at sea, one coal of fire, one false friend, one unadvised word, one false witness may make you a beggar and a prisoner all at once. All the riches and glory of this world is but as smoke and chaff that vanishes, as a dream and vision in the night that tarrieth not, Job 20, verse 8. As if a hungry man dreameth and thinketh that he eateth, and when he awaketh his soul is empty, and like a thirsty man which thinketh he drinketh, and behold, when he is awaked, his soul is faint, as the prophet Isaiah says in chapter 29, verse 8. Where is the glory of Solomon, the sumptuous buildings of Nebuchadnezzar, the 900 chariots of Sisera, the power of Alexander, the authority of Augustus that commanded the whole world to be taxed? Those that have been the most glorious in what men generally account glorious and excellent have had inglorious ends, as Samson for strength, Absalom for favor, Ahithophel for policy, Haman for favor, Asahel for swiftness, Alexander for great conquest, and yet after 12 years poisoned. The same you may see in the four mighty kingdoms, the Chaldean, which was Babylon, Persian, Grecian, and Roman. How soon were they gone and forgotten? The footnote, the most renowned Frederick lost all and sued to be made but sexton of the church that himself had built. I have read of a poor fisherman who, while his nets were a-drying, slept upon the rock and dreamed that he was made a king, and on a sudden starts up and, leaping for joy, fell down from the rock and, in the place of his imaginary felicities, loses his little portion of pleasures. Now rich, now poor, now full, now empty, now in favor, anon out of favor, now honorable, now despised, now health, now sickness, now strength, now weaknesses. Oh, let not these uncertain things keep you from those holy services and heavenly enjoyments that may make you happy forever and render your soul eternally blessed and at ease, when all these transitory things shall bid your soul an everlasting farewell. The footnote, the pomp of this world John compares to the moon, which increases and decreases. Remedy number four, the fourth remedy against this device of Satan, is seriously to consider that the great things of this world are very hurtful and dangerous to the outward and inward man through the corruptions that be in the hearts of men. Oh, the rest, the peace, the comfort, the content that the things of this world do strip many men of. Oh, the fears, the cares, the envy, the malice, the dangers, the mischiefs that they subject men to. The footnote, Henry II, hearing Mentz, his chief city, to be taken, used this blasphemous speech, "I shall never," he says, "love God any more that suffered a city so dear to me to be taken from me." They oftentimes make men carnally confident. The footnote, when one presented Antipater, king of Macedonia, with a book treating on happiness, his answer was, "I have no leisure." The rich man's riches are a strong tower in his imagination. "I said in my prosperity, I should never be moved," Psalm 30, verse 6. They often swell the heart with pride and make men forget God and neglect God and despise the rock of their salvation. When Jeshurun waxed fat and was grown thick and covered with fatness, then he forgot God and forsook God that made him and lightly esteemed the rock of his salvation, as Moses speaks in Deuteronomy 32:15. Ah, the time, the thoughts, the spirits that the things of the world consume and spend. Oh, how do they hinder the actings of faith upon God? How do they interrupt our sweet communion with God? How they do abate our love to the people of God? How cool our love to the things of God, and work us to act like those that are most unlike to God? Oh, the deadness, the barrenness that does attend men under great outward mercies. The footnote, the four good mothers beget four bad daughters. Great familiarity begets contempt, truth, hatred, virtue, envy, riches, ignorance, which is a French proverb. Oh, the riches of the world chokes the word, that men live under the most soul-searching and soul-enriching means with lean souls. Though they have full purses, though their chests are full of silver, yet their hearts are empty of grace. In Genesis 13:2, it is said that Abraham was very rich in cattle and silver and in gold. According to the Hebrew, it is Abraham was very weary, to show that riches are a heavy burden and a hindrance many times to heaven and happiness. The footnote, Ponocrates bestowed 5 talents for a gift upon one Anacreon, who for 2 nights after was so troubled with care how to keep them and how to bestow them, as he carried them back again to Ponocrates, saying they were not worth the pains which he had already taken for them. King Henry IV asked the Duke of Alva if he had observed the great eclipse of the sun, which had lately happened. "No," said the Duke, "I have so much to do on earth that I have no leisure to look up to heaven." Ah, that this were not true of more professors in these days, professors of religion. It is very sad to think how their hearts and time is so much taken up with earthly things that they have scarce any leisure to look up to heaven or to look after Christ and the things that belong to their everlasting peace. Riches, though well got, yet are but like to manna. Those that gathered less had no want or lack, and those that gathered more, it was but a trouble and an annoyance to them. The world is troublesome, and yet it is loved. What would it be if it were peaceable? You embrace it, though it be filthy. What would you do if it were beautiful, actually? You cannot keep your hands from the thorns. How earnest would you be then in gathering the flowers? Footnote, a recollection of Augustine. He got that from, apparently. The world may be fitly likened to the serpent Scytale, or Scytale, whereof it is reported that when she cannot overtake the flying passengers, she does with her beautiful colors so astonish and amaze them that they have no power to pass away till she has stung them. The footnote, Sicily is so full of sweet flowers that dogs cannot hunt there. And what do all the sweet contents of the world of this world but make us lose the scent of heaven? How many thousands are there now on earth that have found this true by experience, that have spun a fair thread to strangle themselves, both temporally and eternally, by being bewitched by the beauty and bravery of this world? Remedy number five, the fifth remedy against this device of Satan, is to consider that all the felicity of this world is mixed, or happiness. Our light is mixed with darkness, our joy with sorrow, our pleasures with pain, our honor with dishonor, our riches with wants, or lacks. If our lights be spiritual, clear, and quick, we may see in the felicity of this world our wine mixed with water, our honey with gall, our sugar with wormwood, and our roses with prickles. The footnote, Hark, scholar, said the harlot to Apuleius, it is but a bitter sweet you are so fond of. Surely all the things of this world are but bitter sweets. Sorrow attends worldly joy, danger attends worldly safety, loss attends worldly labors, tears attend worldly purposes. As to these things, men's hopes are vain, their sorrow certain, and joy feigned. The honors, profits, pleasures, and delights of the world are true gardens of Adonis, where we can gather nothing but trivial flowers surrounded by many briars. Remedy number six, the sixth remedy against this device of Satan, is to get better acquaintance and better assurance of more blessed and glorious things. The footnote, let heaven be a man's object, and earth will soon be his abject. Luther being at one time in some wants, or lacks, it happened that a good sum of money was unexpectedly sent him by a nobleman of Germany, at which, being something amazed, he said, I fear that God will give me my reward here, but I protest I will not be so satisfied. That which raised up their spirits, Hebrews 10 and 11, to trample upon all the beauty, bravery, and glory of the world was the acquaintance with an assurance of better and more durable things. They took joyfully the spoiling of their goods, knowing in themselves that they had in heaven a better and more durable substance. They looked for a house that had foundations whose builder and maker was God. And they looked for another country, even a heavenly. They saw him that was invisible and had an eye to the recompense of reward. And this made them count all the glory and bravery of this world to be too poor and contemptible for them to set their hearts upon. The main reason why men dote upon the world and damn their souls to get the world is because they are not acquainted with a greater glory. Men ate acorns till they were acquainted with the use of wheat. Ah, were men more acquainted with what union and communion with God means, what it is to have a new name and a new stone that none knows but he that hath it, Revelation 2:17. Did they but taste more of heaven and live more in heaven and had more glorious hopes of going to heaven, ah, how easily would they have the moon under their feet. It was an excellent saying of Louis of Bavière, Emperor of Germany, such goods are worth getting and owning as will not sink or wash away if a shipwreck happened, but will wade and swim out with us. The footnote, there is, says Augustine, goods of the throne, and there are goods of the footstool. When Basil was tempted with money and preferment, he says, give me money that may last forever and glory that may eternally flourish, for the fashion of this world passes away as the waters of the river that run by a city. It is recorded of Lazarus that after his resurrection from the dead, he was never seen to laugh. His thoughts and affections were so fixed in heaven, though his body was on earth, and therefore he could not but slight temporal things his heart being so bent and set upon eternals. There are goods for the throne of grace as God, Christ, the Spirit, adoption, justification, remission of sin, peace with God, and peace with conscience. And there are goods of the footstool as honors, riches, the favor of creatures, and other comforts and accommodations of this life. Now he that has acquaintance with and assurance of the goods of the throne will easily trample upon the goods of the footstool. Ah, that you would make it your business, your work, to mind more and make sure more to your own souls the great things of eternity that will yield you joy in life and peace in death and a crown of righteousness in the day of Christ's appearing, and that will lift up your souls above all the beauty and bravery of this bewitching world, that will raise your feet above other men's heads. When a man comes to be assured of a crown, a scepter, the royal robes, etc., he then begins to have low, mean, and contemptible thoughts of those things that before he highly prized. So will assurance of more great and glorious things breed in the soul a holy scorn and contempt of all these poor, mean, low things which the soul before did value above God, Christ, and heaven, etc. Remedy number 7, the seventh remedy against this device of Satan, is seriously to consider that true happiness and satisfaction is not to be had in the enjoyment of worldly good. True happiness is too big and too glorious a thing to be found in anything below that God that is a Christian's chiefest good. Footnote, true happiness lies only in our enjoyment of a suitable good, a pure good, a total good, and an eternal good, and God is only such a good, and such a good can only satisfy the soul of man. Philosophers could say that he was never a happy man that might afterwards become miserable. The blessed angels, those glittering courtiers, have all felicities and blessedness, and yet they have neither gold, nor silver, nor jewels, nor none of the beauty and bravery of this world. Certainly, if happiness was to be found in these things, the Lord Jesus, who is the right and royal heir of all things, would have exchanged his cradle for a crown, his birth chamber a stable for a royal palace, his poverty for plenty, his despised followers for shining courtiers, and his mean or low provisions for the choicest delicates, etc. Certainly, happiness lies not in those things that a man may enjoy and yet be miserable forever. Now, a man may be great and graceless with Pharaoh, honorable and damnable with Saul, rich and miserable with Dives, etc. Therefore, happiness lies not in these things. Certainly, happiness lies not in those things that cannot comfort a man upon a dying bed. Is it honors, riches, or friends, etc., that can comfort you when you come to die? Or is it not rather faith in the blood of Christ, the witness of the Spirit of Christ, the sense and feeling of the love and favor of Christ, and the hopes of eternally reigning with Christ? Can happiness lie in those things that cannot give us health or strength or ease or a good night's rest or an hour's sleep or a good stomach? Why, all the honors, riches, and delights of this world cannot give these poor things to us. Therefore, certainly happiness lies not in their enjoyment, in the enjoyment of them, etc. The footnote, Gregory the Great used to say, "He is poor whose soul is void of grace, not whose coffers are empty of money." The reasonable soul may be busied about other things, but it cannot be filled with them. And surely happiness is not to be found in those things that cannot satisfy the souls of men. Now, none of these things can satisfy the soul of man. He that loves silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loves abundance with increase. This is also vanity, said the wise man, Ecclesiastes 5:10. The barren womb, the horse leech's daughter, the grave and hell will as soon be satisfied as the soul of man will by the enjoyment of any worldly good. Some one thing or other will be forever wanting to that soul that has none but outward good to live upon. You may as soon fill a bag with wisdom, a chest with virtue, or a circle with a triangle, as the heart of man with anything here below. A man may have enough of the world to sink him, but he can never have enough to satisfy him, etc. Remedy number 8. The 8th remedy against this device of Satan is solemnly to consider of the dignity of the soul. Oh, the soul of man is more worth than 1,000 worlds. It is the greatest abasing of it that can be to it, to let it dote upon a little shining earth, upon a little painted beauty and fading glory, when it is capable of union with Christ, of communion with God, and of enjoying the eternal vision of God. Seneca could say, I believe he was a heathen philosopher, I am too great and born to greater things than that I should be a slave to my body. Oh, do you say my soul is too great and born to greater things than that I should confine it to a heap of white and yellow earth? The footnote, Plutarch tells of Themistocles that he accounted it not to stand with his state to stoop down to take up the spoils the enemies had scattered in flight, but says to one of his followers, you may, for you are not Themistocles, himself. Oh, what a sad thing it is that a heathen should set his feet upon those very things that most professors of religion set their hearts, and for the gain of which, with Balaam, many run the hazard of losing their immortal souls forever. I have been set the longer upon the remedies that may help us against this dangerous device of Satan, or I've spoken about these quite a while here now, because he does usually more hurt to the souls of men by this device than he does by all other devices. For a close, I wish, as once Christendom did, that sentence, Ecclesiastes 2:11, then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. He would hope that was engraven on the doorposts into which you enter, on the tables where you sit, on the dishes out of which you eat, on the cups out of which you drink, on the bedsteads where you lie, on the walls of the house where you dwell, on the garments which you wear, on the heads of the horses on which you ride, and on the foreheads of all them who you meet, that your souls may not, by the beauty and bravery of the world, be kept off from those holy and heavenly services that may render you blessed while you live and happy when you die, that you may breathe out your last into his bosom who lives forever, and who will make them happy forever that prefer Christ's spirituals and eternals above all temporal, transitory things. All right, that is the end of device number 1. And Lord willing, we'll go on to device number 2 next time. But until then, go in keeping a mind on God and heavenly things. And Lord willing, we'll talk to you again soon.